You're listening to Better Than Fiction with your hosts, D.L. Nelson and Scott Sackett.
All right, welcome back to Better Than Fiction, your pop culture podcast. As always, I'll be your host, D.L. Nelson, joined by my other host,
Scott Sackett.
Yo, Scott. You know what episode number this is?
The 782.
That's a good guess. But it's 480.
Woo!
That's right. Is it 480? Does that sound right? That's right. It's 480.
It's 4 something.
480. When you said 782, it kind of threw me off a little bit. But yeah, episode 480. Glad
Woo!
To be. Yes, glad to be here. Thank you for that. And hey, let's do some cool stuff.
Sounds good, man.
You have something cool to tell me about?
Yes, I do. Okay, so I got some notes, but I'm gonna. This isn't really going to be a guess, you know, like, hey, guess what this is.
Okay.
But I'm going to talk about a comic book that I've been reading.
A single issue or a trade?
I don't want to give too much away. So let me just talk about... I want to talk about the plot. And I want to see if you... have read this, but I don't know if you've read this or not.
Okay.
And I'm going to tell you, before I tell you what it is, I'm going to tell you about the plot.
Okay.
So, and I'm going to tell the plot in kind of vague terms and not name names so you don't. But I just want to, okay, and I want you, when I'm telling it, if you don't know what it is, I want you to kind of tell me if this is something that you think would be cool.
Okay.
To read. So, the setting is a universe. It's on Earth, but it's in this world, some of the people or a large percentage of the people have unusual abilities. Okay, and some of them are like superpowers. Some people have become superheroes. Some people have become supervillains out of this. Okay, it's just something that's just, they're like mutants or like Inhumans or something. Some of the people become superheroes, some of them become supervillains. And so, but not everybody has these abilities. And not all the abilities are like useful. Think of it kind of like the Inhumans.
Okay.
Okay. And it's not, I don't know what the percentage is. We'll say it's a third of the people, okay, have something, some kind of special ability. So there's how it works is you go to school and then there are like we'll call them colleges that train you to use your abilities. There's different ones, a few different ones. There's this real prestigious one that's like the most well thought of one. The most powerful hero is like the Superman type. We'll call him Mr. Mighty just for because he kind of plays into the story I'm gonna tell you. So. Mr. Mighty graduated from this one. He's the most famous alumni. He's the most powerful superhero. There's all kinds of supervillains that they fight. So there's a kid who he goes through his school, and nobody from his school, there's like one or two people that have superpowers, and one of them in particular wants to be a superhero, and he wants to go to this particular superhero school, Mr. Mighty's superhero school. So... the one Mr. Mighty graduated from.
Mm-hmm.
So Mr. Mighty, or so there's another kid who doesn't have any powers. But when he was a kid, like his mom has powers, his dad had powers. His dad has passed away, but his mom had powers. But like his mom, I think she can make things levitate. I forget what his dad could do. Anyway, so but when he was a kid, his mom took him to the doctor. And the doctor examined him, because like all the kids, their superpowers start coming in around like 6 or 7. His mom took him to the doctor. The doctor examined and said he's not going to get a super. He does not have the, we'll call it the X. He does not have the X gene. Anyway, so his mom didn't tell him this because he worshipped Mr. Mighty. And he kept a notebook with all these superheroes. He like when there were superheroes were battling, he would go out and he'd watch them. He'd take notes. You know, this guy does this, and so he had this notebook. Well, there was a kid in his school that had superpowers. He could make things explode with his hands, kind of like the Human Torch, but more explosive. He good turn of flame. He just shoot flame out of his hand. And so this guy kind of taunted this guy. This guy was real arrogant and brash, and he's like, oh, I'm going to go to this school that Mr. Mighty graduated from. And so he found this kid's notebook, and he goes, you can't be a superhero. You don't have any powers. You have to have powers to go to school. And he goes, no. And it used to be, but they changed the law, and they said, you don't. If you can apply and pass all the tests, they will allow you in this school. So he taunts him. He ends up burning up his notebook that he's kept from this little kid. He doesn't burn up. He steals it. He kind of singes it. So the kid's like, So then one day there's a battle. Some kind of like super villains like running amok in the city. Mr. Mighty showed up. Mr. Mighty's fighting him. So this kid is like, oh my gosh, it's Mr. Mighty. It's the first time I've ever seen him in person. And so he goes, and Mr. Mighty, like, defeats the thing. And when he's flying off, he grabs onto his legs. He, like, jumps up and grabs onto him. And he's flying, and Mr. Mighty's like, you gotta let go of me, kid. And he's like, no, I'll die. They're 300 foot in the air or whatever. And so he lands, and Mr. Mighty starts to change, and he realizes that Mr. Mighty has become weak. And he's like, oh, yeah, I can only be Mr. Mighty for a certain amount of time. And when I run out of energy, I become this weak person, almost like Billy Batson, kind of. So, he becomes weak. So he gets to talking, and the kid tells him, well, I want to be a superhero just like you. And he goes, well, you can't be a superhero without any superpowers. He goes, no. And so he kind of argued, he's like, no. And so the kid's like, oh, man, So then this creature that Mr. Mighty was fighting, he had captured. It was kind of like this lava creature, and he captured it in this bottle. Well, when they're flying off and everything, the bottle fell out of Mr. Mighty had kind of a pouch, and it fell out of it. And so later, that bottle got opened, and this creature got loose, and it attacked the kid that had the explosion powers. It attacked him, and it kind of absorbed him into it. And so everybody's like freaking out. Well, Mr. Mighty can't do anything because he's still weak. He hadn't recharged from before. And so the kid attacks this villain. And all these other heroes have come along, and they can't do anything. They're like, where's Mr. Mighty? And this guy knows, the kid knows that Mr. Mighty's weak because he sees him, but no one recognizes him because he's in his weak form. And so the kid attacks the creature and, like, distracts him, but he gets attacked by the creature, but he doesn't have any powers. And so Mr. Mighty sees this, and, like, the other heroes are able to intervene. They save that guy, and the kid's like, I can't believe you saved me. And, so Mr. Mighty tells him, okay, I'm gonna tell you the secret of my power. And because you've reminded, oh, and Mr. Mighty sees him. That's the other thing. Mr. Mighty sees him. So Mr. Mighty's like, I've got to reach inside and get my power back. And so he reaches inside, and he becomes Mr. Mighty again. And he goes over and attacks the creature. And so he tells him, he goes, I forgot the most important thing of being a hero is having heart. And you've reminded me of that. So I'm going to tell you the secret of my superpowers. And he goes, oh, by the way, the test for to get into this hero school is the next day. He goes, I'm going to tell you the secret of my powers. I'm going to share my powers with you. And he pulls out a strand of hair, and he goes, eat this hair. He's like, what? And he's like, my power has been passed down from person to person. And he said, I've been looking for the right person to send this to. But he said, the problem is, I haven't found the right person, but you're and there's kind of like a training thing they do too. But anyway, I kind of skipped over that. But anyway, so he tells him, if you eat this, you'll gain my power. You'll gain my power. You'll be like the next in line. Anyway, so he eats it, and he says, but the problem is, you're tested tomorrow, and you haven't had time to figure out how to use it. And so, But now you have this ability to, whatever, change your DNA. Now you'll have a power, but it'll be like mine. Anyway, so he goes to the test, and the test is they get all the candidates, And then one guy's mad. He's like, what are you doing applying? You can't apply. And he's like, no, no, no. The rules say anybody can apply. And so there's like a mock city, almost like the Danger Room, but it's huge. You got to go in there and fight. There's these robots that are worth a certain amount of points. And you got to go and fight them. And the different ones you defeat, you get points for it. And so he goes in there, and all these people are like, you know, using their powers, and they're using lasers and rocks and all kinds of different things to defeat these robots. Oh, and he had met this girl, and so at one point he sees there's this big robot creature that, and some of them aren't worth any points, by the way. So there's a big robot creature. It's not worth any points, but it's this girl can levitate. But what it's done is it's dropped some this. Robot drops some rocks on her, and she's pinned, and she can't breathe. And so he runs up there, and he's like, I don't know what to do, but he goes, I got to save this girl. And nobody else would help her because his robot wasn't worth any points. And so he jumps in the air, and he, like, summons his power, but he hadn't channeled it. So instead of, like, becoming ultra-powerful himself, his arm grows and becomes glowing and powerful, kind of like Iron Fist, but it's a soul arm. And he punches this thing and takes it out. And then with his arm, he's able to pick it up and pick the rocks off the girl. And then he collapses. And then the test ends. And this girl's like, oh, you saved my life, you know. And so the test ends, but they do the scores. And he's like 0 points. He's at the bottom. He's like, oh, man. So he goes home, and he's kind of dejected. Well, the next day, he gets this kind of holographic letter type thing, and it's like, it's from Mr. Mighty, and it's like, oh yeah, I've been named, I've come back to the school, I'm gonna become a teacher, since I'm the most famous hero, they've selected me to send out all everybody's letters. And he goes, even though you didn't get any points, there was something we didn't tell you we scored on, and that was the score of being a hero. Everyone that got that performed a heroic act got points, and it shows the tally. And because of the points, he comes out on top because he attacked he saved this girl, and so he gets into the hero school and begins his training in the hero school. Anyway, that's the plot of this comic. Do you have any idea what that is?
It's a comic that you're reading.
It's a comic that I'm reading.
How about a hint on the publisher?
I'll give you a number. The comic worldwide sold 65 million copies. When the comic has sold more copies than the first book came out, the first collected edition, it sold more copies than Marvel and DC sold combined that year.
It's a manga?
It is manga.
Is it
I'll give you another hint.
Hang on a minute.
Okay.
Let me think about this. It's manga. I mean, I'm trying to think of all the different mangas. There is one called Something School, but the name's escaping me. It's not Drifting Classroom. That's a horror book. Dragon. I don't know. What would it be? Something School, right?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
My Hero Academia. So, it's My Hero Academia, and I'm not going to attempt to the creator's name is Koei Horikoshi.
It's pretty Koei Horikoshi, maybe. Yeah.
So, and it's been adapted. I was going to mention that. It's been adapted, obviously. So one of my employees, for a long time, people have been saying, oh man, you know, if you like traditional comics, you should read My Hero Academia. It's like what comics used to be back in the day.
I thought her ass was hanging out, but she's got her pants are white.
Yeah, her pants are white. But anyway, one of the guys at my work is really into this. He watches the anime.
Yeah.
And so I had some Barnes & Noble bucks, or not bucks, but a gift card. And I had like $10, so I was like, oh, you know what? I'm gonna get this first episode or first trade. It was $10.
How many are there? 16.
No, there's quite a few of the trades.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think they're still going on.
Oh yeah.
And there are spinoffs, man. Anyway, so then not long ago, and I had kind of read a little bit of it. So not long ago, we were at Walmart, and they had, now I'd kind of been looking. This is on Crunchyroll. The anime is on Crunchyroll, and I don't know Crunchyroll. Well, I had online. I had watched the first episode, and I kind of liked it. Well, at Walmart they had a special Walmart, and if you look on Amazon now, I don't know if it's still the case, but at one point I looked on Amazon, and you could buy like the first half of season one. It was like $30.
Yeah,
and I was like, yeah, I'm not doing that. Well, they had seasons one and two for like $35.
That's cool.
I was like, you know what? I'll do that.
Is it a Walmart exclusive?
It says it's a Walmart exclusive. And they had a 3 and 4 for $35 also. Anyway, and the hero's name is All Might. The superpowers are called quirks, as they call them in the show. It takes place in Japan, of course. And the little blurb on the back says, born quirkless, Deku earns a place at UA with Ultimate Academy, I believe. UA High School with his courage, facing a world-class sports festival and a villain out for blood. Anyway, I've read about half of this, something like that, and
will you keep up with it?
With this?
Yeah.
I don't know if I'll keep...
Will you go with 20 volumes in?
I don't know if I go 20 volumes in. I have no idea how many they're at right now. I think they're quite a few in. You know, if I finish this, I may pick up volume two. I mean, I'm not that I'm buying a bunch of comics, so, you know, why not, right?
Yeah, for sure.
And the art isn't bad. You know, some of the manga, that art is just crazy. This isn't bad.
There's no Junji Ito, but it's pretty good.
Well, yeah, it's definitely a different look than that. But some of those I've seen, it's like, it's all like, I don't know.
It's not Akira.
It's not Akira. Well, yeah, Akira, I would put Akira like maybe the time. I don't know where you put Junji Ito and Akira. But, you know, the classic manga was compared to a lot of the stuff now, it's very Western. You know, some of the stuff now you see it and you're like, I can't tell what's going on in this page. All I see are a bunch of screaming faces.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like that.
Eyes as big as saucers.
Right. That's all you see. You know, it's just like a panel of faces.
Well, they want to give you like the facial expressions and then they'll show like a random like sweat bead going down their face.
Yeah.
You never see that in a Marvel comic.
No. But I like the cartoon's pretty good. I will probably pick up season 3 and 4, especially at the Walmart thing for $35. I mean, that's not a bad deal for you know, I mean, that was 38 episodes.
Yeah, they're like 30 minutes.
They're like 22 minutes, I think.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, they're not real long, but...
How's the Blu-ray quality?
Pretty good. Yeah, I mean, you know, this is modern stuff, dude. Anyway, I didn't think you were reading that, or you were familiar with that, or whatever.
No, not at all. I mean, I've heard of it, clearly, but yeah.
Right, I mean, yeah, you can, but...
I think there was a Free Comic Book Day issue of that at one point, though, years ago.
There may have been. I think I may have that. Actually, I think I got... You know what? I think one year at New York Comic Con, I was at a panel, and they gave out posters of this. I gave it to that guy at work. He's really into it. He'll wear, like, a shirt and stuff of it. And he's always telling me about it. You know, it's funny because... So I read this or I watch the anime, and I am reminded immediately of, like, the original X-Men stuff. You know, because it's like kids going to school, trying to learn their powers, kind of figuring it out. And that was kind of... I mean, it's a different genre, but... When I read the Harry Potter books, I was like, you know what? This is a lot like the original X-Men. It's this, you know, hey, they're going to school. There's like some school drama, you know, but they're trying to figure out, they're fighting weird stuff. They're, you know, I think there's a market for that kind of thing, you know, obviously. 65 million copies of that were sold. So, you know.
That's a good number.
That's a pretty good number. I would say, yeah.
That's why Barnes & Noble sells that stuff.
If you go to Barnes & Noble, and you know what's funny is we've been here before. Back in the 90s this happened. But it was Borders then.
Yeah.
But you go there, and there's one of their rack, because when I picked that up, I was looking. There's not even an entire rack of American graphic novels.
Mm-hmm.
Of all publishers, not mm-hmm. just Marvel or DC, all publishers.
Right.
And usually it'll be the row, and then on the end will be like some role-playing game stuff, or like Dungeons & Dragons. Last time I was there, I think they moved Dungeons & Dragons somewhere else, so there were puzzles on this. But it won't even be a complete row. Whereas the manga was row, the other side of the row, a huge cart, and then a table up by the front door, you know.
I mean, but still, people have got to know you can get that stuff cheaper as pre-order or online. So who's going into Barnes & Noble and dropping full price on those books?
Kids with their parents.
I guess. I mean,
yeah, but
well, for one thing, they're only $10 versus right. a $50 Marvel book.
Yeah. I mean, well, it's black and white and it's small, which I think is actually works in its favor because it's easy. I mean, you know, it's easy to read.
You know,
I guarantee you that probably inspired a lot of those small Marvel books they're doing.
Oh, sure, yeah.
You know, the idea of maybe small is where it's at.
Well, for consumable that you can just, you know, read it and throw it away or whatever, not archival, clearly, but if you listen to people who go to Japan, they say that people just leave stuff like that laying around.
Yeah.
Like that Show and Jump stuff, people get the weekly or the daily or whatever.
Yeah.
And you can just find it laying on the subway. Like people read it and just drop it. Like there's no collectability or whatever.
No.
Well, I've got a couple books that are related that I was going to pull out.
Okay.
I got a question first. Since you had a question, I got a question. All right, let me tell you something, and then I'm going to ask you a follow-up question to it. So back when I was a kid, when you always talk about when you were a kid, I'll tell you when I was a kid story.
Yeah. Back in my day.
No, not like that, but yet I remember vividly that me and my parents and my sister went up to see my grandparents. They lived in Ponca City at the time.
Okay.
And we'd go up there on the weekend sometimes and spend the weekend, come back down or whatever. But we went up there that weekend for a wedding.
Okay.
And I was a little kid.
Okay.
So I was maybe like, I don't know, 6, 7, I don't know. I wasn't very old. And I remember that. And I don't know if it was the network TV premiere or not, but that weekend they were going to show, and I hadn't seen it, they were going to show Planet of the Apes.
Oh, okay.
On TV. And so I asked my mom, I said, hey, because I wasn't going to go to the wedding.
Yeah.
I'm not going to the wedding. I just basically went on this trip up there. But like, and my dad wouldn't either. It was my mom and my grandmother were going to go. And I said, hey, can I watch Planet of the Apes? And my mom got one look at the gorillas riding horseback, and she's like, oh, you can't watch that. You'll have nightmares. And, you know, and I wasn't very old, but I remember it plainly that I really...
How old do you think you were, just out of curiosity?
I was probably like 5 or 6.
Okay.
I wasn't very old at all. And I don't know when the network TV premiere of that was. The movie came out in 68, so I would have been 2. This is years after, so I was like maybe 5, 6, I don't know how old I was, but I was like, I really wanted to watch it. They were going to show it on TV. Now, here's the problem. Back in those days, everybody, typically people had a TV, maybe not more than one, surely not for old people. And also, the TV tended to be about a 24-inch, in a wood crate console set on the floor.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't like a super flat panel on the wall where everybody's got one in each room. Literally, my grandparents had one TV. I only remember them having one TV, and it was like a wood console thing that sat on the floor.
Yeah, man.
And so, like, my dad and my grandpa watched something else. Meanwhile, I was steaming because I didn't get to see Planet of the Apes. You know, years later, I saw it, of course. I bring all that up because, to me, and I know in our other podcast we talk about Jaws being the first blockbuster, and, you know, and then, of course, there was Star Wars and Close Encounters and things like that that were huge. But to me, I remember clearly, like, how bad I wanted to see Planet of the Apes. You know, and then later on I got older, I could see the other movies, but I was still pretty small at this point. Well, anyway, I say all that because I've been reading this book that I've got, and I thought I would bring it today. And I bring it all up because I don't know if you know this or not. Well, I know you know this part, but you may not know both parts. But I bring this up because when Marvel, or maybe I should say Disney, when Disney bought the movie catalog of 20th Century Fox, not only did they get Alien and Predator, but they also got Planet of the Apes.
Oh, okay. I don't know if I realized that.
Franchise. So what they've done is they have reprinted the original Marvel run of Planet of the Apes.
The magazines?
Not the magazines.
Oh, okay.
But you can get those through Boom.
Oh, okay.
But the original 70s comics, which there are
11. I don't know if I ever read those.
Which there are 11 of. They only did 11. The first six is an adaptation of the first movie, and the next five are an adaptation of the second movie. But the reason why I bring it up is because now Marvel has now came out with Planet of the Apes issue 1, the new one, brand new, came out last month. Issue 2 comes out, I think, this week or next week. So Planet of the Apes is kind of back in the forefront. But I say all that because I brought a book that I've been looking at, that I've had for a while. I've had it for maybe a couple of years. More than a year for sure. And it's pretty spectacular. It comes with a dust jacket. I took mine off. This is called The Making of Planet of the Apes by J.W. Rinzler. And he's done some other making of books, I do believe. So this printed on cover, it's got Charlton Heston in his
astronaut suit.
Yeah, from when he, you know.
Yeah.
And then there's a production guy. I think that's the director, actually, in the background. This book is spectacular. And I'm going to tell you why it's spectacular.
Yes.
And I've got a lot of making of the movie books.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got a lot of them. But the reason why this book is spectacular, I can tell you in numerous ways why it's spectacular. And, well, number one, when you first open it up, it's got the end papers are a map of Ape World. It shows where their ship crashed. It shows a spot where the Statue of Liberty is. It shows a spot where they got rounded up in the woods, or I guess kind of whatever it is, like cornfield, and then it's got like Ape City. So it's a different end papers on the back too, by the way. So this book has both color and black and white photos. It's got, not only does it have basically behind the scenes and movie behind the scenes shots, but it's also got shots in the movie, but it's got like mechanical drawings like you do in like mechanical drawing class.
Oh, like, yeah, like that's a blueprint of the ship right there.
Well,
how they're going to build it
and it's how it's going to work set in the water.
Yeah,
from when they crashed. It's got all of that kind of stuff. Numerous things like that. It's got matte paintings. It's got paintings that are designed to show like what the scenes might look like. It's also got really cool pencil drawings that this guy, and I'm getting a blank on his name. It's like Hausen or something is the artist they've got that does all these unbelievable drawings. Not even these are like paintings. these unbelievable drawings in here. We'll have to get to, I'll show you some of these. And like some of them are two-page spreads that are full bleed. They're just really, really cool behind-the-scenes stuff and like pre-production art. Also in this book, so Charlton Heston had a journal where he wrote down different things that happened, and he drew, he did little drawings in his journal of during the production of the movie. So part of his journal entries and part of his some of his drawings he did are in the book also. So like here's some mechanical drawing kind of drawings.
Oh yeah,
like,
well, yeah,
like what you call like oh here we go. So this guy, some of his pencil drawings are really, really sharp. And of course there's all kind of like wardrobe photos of the cast in the wardrobe. There's a section on how they did the makeup. It talks about, I mean, look at this. Some of these pictures, some of these drawings.
Oh, that's cool.
Some of these drawings are just absolutely really cool. So basically this book has some of the rewrites of the movie in it. It's got about four rewrites. So you can read the rewrites in the book where different writers took their swing at the movie. At one point, Rod Serling was involved in it.
Yeah.
One of the main writers, and I think he was writer number 12 or 13 that worked on the script, is a guy named Michael Wilson, but not Michael G. Wilson that's involved with the Bond stuff. This is Michael Wilson from McAlester, Oklahoma.
Oh, really?
That he doctors scripts back in the day, and so he was one of the script doctors, and a lot of what he did was in the movie. It's like this right here. This is a... okay, so this guy, Pierre Boyle, wrote the book, and he also wrote... I don't know if you noticed that. He also wrote Bridge on the River Kwai.
I knew that. I have the... Have you ever read the book, The Planet of the Apes?
No.
I have the book. I bought it when I was a kid. I've never read it.
So, do you know what the original name of the book was?
The French name. Ape Planet or Ape World or something like that.
Well, it's actually La Planète Dea something or another. But basically, the loose translation is Monkey Planet.
Monkey Planet, yeah.
So anyways, I told you I was going to have a question for you. My question for you is, and then I'll get back into this book, how awesome this book is. But I did have a question for you. Did you have any kind of affinity for Planet of the Apes? Or were you just like, eh, it's okay?
Dude, okay, so I was trying to find when it came on TV. You know, sometimes, and kind of like you, like, when did I see it? And I do not remember the first time I saw it.
Neither do I.
But
it wasn't when I was a kid, though. That shit was shut down.
Oh, yeah. What I was looking for was when the television series came on, because that may have been the first place I really saw it.
I think that was like 71, 72, maybe, something like that. I could be wrong about that, but I think it's about right.
But I remember the television series.
Yeah.
Now I can't find anything about it on Wikipedia. Oh, 74.
Okay.
And I think it was only, I don't know.
It wasn't very long. Like,
it wasn't very long.
Six or eight episodes.
14 episodes.
Okay, yeah, okay.
But,
I thought it was much shorter than that, so that's...
I mean, it's weird because when I was a kid, before I saw Star Wars, so I was really into science fiction. I mean, I think a lot of maybe kids our age or maybe around our age, like Star Wars was like, oh man, I love Star Wars. But I was like into like the 50s science fiction, and I was into Star Trek, of course. And so, I mean, I don't know why, but I really like Planet of the Apes. And I remember watching them on TV. And I've watched, I don't have the, one of these days I need to pick up the complete box set, but I don't have any of them on disc or anything. So when they come on like TCM or whatever, I'll kind of watch them. I don't know if I've seen all of the, cause some of the later ones are pretty crazy.
I've got everyone on Blu-ray if you ever want to watch
them. Oh, do you? But I know I watched several of them. I remember the one, watching the one on TV where there's like the guys with the like mental powers were worshiping the atomic bomb in the cavern and them going into New York City.
That's beneath the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, which is, that's the second one, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I saw them as a kid and I like them. I had, about the time the television series came out, I had two things. I had several Planet of the Apes Magos.
Okay.
And I don't remember which one. They were gorillas. And then I had a Planet of the Apes, like a play set that had trees. It was like a tree house kind of thing. And yeah. It had apes or something.
That thing goes for bucks now, man.
Oh, does it really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine. Because I was young.
Especially if you had that with the box. That would be...
I've never seen it up in my parents' attic. Yeah. So.
Well, this book has a foreword by Fraser Heston. You're like, well, Heston. Charlton Heston's son.
Okay.
Where he talks about how him and his sister would get drugged to these different movies that his dad was involved in. I forgot what it said his mom did. His mom did something or another, but... I think she was involved in the industry to some degree, too, if I'm not mistaken. But anyway, they got to go see a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff. And so he writes this intro, this foreword, that is really cool. And there's some pictures of him. Like, here he is. He's wearing a cowboy hat. And he's got a little knife on his belt. It's Charlton Heston's kid.
Yeah.
So, you know, so he's there when they filmed Planet of the Apes. He got to see all the stuff. There's some other behind-the-scenes shots in here, and he's in the shots. So, I read quite a bit of it, though. It talks, besides the great intro by his son, there, it talks about how they made, I want to say, 6 or 8 huge sets that were outside sets, that were on the Fox Ranch. And the Fox Ranch was this place where they shot movies and stuff. And it was kind of between Santa Monica and in Malibu in California. And they shot the Ape City, the Ape Town and all that where Charlton Heston goes up on the amphitheater steps where he gets caught in the net and they reel him up. All of that outside stuff with all the weird looking ape huts and stuff. That was... on Fox Ranch. They shot a lot of the environment where they crashed their ship into the lake, where they're tracking through the desert before they get caught in the fields. All of that desert walk stuff was shot in Arizona and Utah, right outside of Monument Valley. In one of the shots, you can kind of see a monument kind of behind them, but the rest of it's pretty much the, you know, flat or whatnot, Arizona, desert. And they're talking about that, you know, when you're watching them walking through the desert, you're just seeing them walk, but on the other side of the camera, there's all these like mirrors and stuff and lights to light it and all. And they said, yeah, when they were walking through the desert, it was 104.
Cool.
And they with their flight uniforms on, and with the mirrors and the lights and stuff, it was more like 140.
Yeah, that'd be brutal.
And so they were, you know, everybody's complaining in about how hot it was, and people were dropping like flies, and you know, just heat exhaustion, that kind of thing.
You gotta stay hydrated in that, man.
But it talks about like they went through all these rewrites and all this stuff. The ending of the book is quite a bit different than the ending of the movie. And at one point, they talked to Pierre Boyle or whatever. They were writing him back and forth. He didn't come to the set, but they were writing to him. Of course, he's in France or whatever.
Yeah.
And they kind of told him what they were going to do. And he wasn't very happy about it until later on when he finally saw a cut of the movie. Years later, he didn't go to the premiere or anything. He finally saw a cut of the movie, and he actually said in an interview that he thought that the makeup for the apes was really good, and that there a couple of the lines they changed, and especially the end, he thought it stuck better than his ending. So he was pretty happy with how they did his story.
Yeah.
There's just all kind of little things like that in the book that are just really cool. If you're into Planet of the Apes, this book is an absolute must. You can read about, like I said, it's got the every time, not every time, but on some of the rewrites, there's the they'll put in here like a 2 or 3 pages of like, here's what they did different on this rewrite versus that rewrite, and stuff like that's in here. Like I said, all these illustrations that are in here that are just really sharp, behind the scenes photos. Oh yeah, so Edward G. Robbins,
yeah,
was going to be in it. He was going to be one of the orangutans. Dr. Zaris, I think, but he was all, they wanted a star like him in it, because he was, at the time, he was an older gentleman, but he had like a pedigree of being a big star.
Oh, yeah.
Early on. And so they were wanting him to be in it. He was going to be in it, but what happened to him was he refused to shave his beard. And so since he refused to shave his beard, they said, we can't use you because...
Yeah, you got to have a... Yeah.
With the appliances of the chin and stuff on the monkey stuff, they couldn't use him. So stuff like that. They had a certain budget they were going to try to stick with. Like 300-something thousand for makeup, which at the time was a lot of money for makeup.
A lot of makeup to do, man.
Yeah, and then they had to hire, at one point, they had all these, especially in the scenes where there's the monkeys or the gorillas riding horses, and then some of the city scenes, there's like a lot of, I think they said it, sometimes there may be like 70 monkey creatures in the shot, potentially. They had to hire a lot of additional makeup people to do that. And then at one point, they're like, well, they didn't know if they had enough money to do the movie. But what happened was the Sound of Music came out right before it. It only cost like $8 million, I think is what it said, to film. And it made like 50 or 60 million. It made a lot of money back then. It 10 times its money or something like that. And so all of a sudden, they had a huge cash flow. And so that's kind of how, because of that, they were able to go ahead and make this movie. And it's just got tons of little things like that in it. If you want to know anything about the wardrobe or the makeup or anything like that, it's in here. I cannot stress how cool these black and white drawings are that are throughout the book of potential scenes and sets and things like that. And, of course, there's color paintings and things like that in here, too. Tons of behind-the-scenes shots. I mean, at one point, there's a photo in here of when they were having the trial, but it was, like, from a different angle, and you can see everybody behind the camera looking at the people. And then look at this. Like, here's some of the sets that they're actually building, which, you know, I don't think they'd ever do anything like this nowadays, right? I mean, look at this. This is crazy.
They'd probably just CGI.
This would be all CGI now. But like these, the steps of the amphitheater, those were all made. Like they did that.
It's built around them.
They did that form, and they foamed them in where it hardened or whatever. Whatever that kind of material is they use. So, I mean, the photos in here are just really cool. The artwork.
Yeah, some nice production drawings and stuff.
Oh, look at this. Yeah, highly recommend it. It talks about the beards on these three guys. Like, Charlton Heston was the only real one. The other guys had fake beards. Yeah, it's a pretty damn cool book. But
it's only over the first movie, right?
Just the first movie.
Okay.
The book's got I want to say it's... this. Okay, by the way, this book is... it's landscape barely. It's almost a square, but not quite. It's wider than it is tall.
Yeah.
And it's damn near 300 pages.
It's about the size of an old record. If you're
yeah. Thinking. Well, it's, you know, I was going to compare it to a record, but it's not quite square like a record.
Right.
It's almost the same dimensions as a record. Yeah, the book is 300 and maybe 310 pages altogether. Heavy, heavy, hard. It's got super thick paper. It's a heavy hardcover. Comes with a dust jacket. I want to say the cover price on this book is, it's not cheap. I want to say it's either $50 or $60. It's a kind of a pricey book, but very, very nice. If you're into making of movie books and you like Planet of the Apes, this book is a must. Now, I told you I had two things kind of related.
The sad thing is, when you tell me that's $50 anymore, I'm like, that's not it. That, that's anymore, it seems like the books we get, that's about what they cost.
But is it still available? I've had it for a while now, so I don't know if it's still available or not.
Yeah.
I got one other book.
Okay.
Now, think about how big that book is. Oversized, about 300 pages, tons of text, tons of photos, drawings, the whole bit, right? Great package, right?
Yep.
I think you could even say it was a great package.
Great package.
Now, I've got another Planet of the Apes related thing I want to bring to the table.
Okay,
let's see. This is an omnibus.
Okay. That's an omnibus?
It is an omnibus.
That is very thin for an omnibus, but it's labeled as an omnibus.
It is an omnibus. It's a legit omnibus.
Oh, this is the one you were talking about.
So I have in my hand the Planet of the Apes Adventures, the original Marvel Years omnibus. Now, you would think this, you're like, omnibuses are usually 30, 40 issues and some backup matter, and they're usually like 700 to 1,200 pages. Typically, yes. This omnibus is right at maybe 222 pages, and it's only 11 issues. But you know what? It's not the thinnest omnibus they have.
It's not?
It's not. This has got 11 issues. Devil Dinosaur's an omnibus of 9 issues. Did you know this?
I think I have a paperback trade.
I've got a trade of that, but the omnibus of that, there is an omnibus of that that's even thinner than this. When I put this next to my other omnibuses, it's a joke.
Yeah.
This is a joke. But you know what the big joke of this is, though?
The price?
What do you think the price, not what I paid for it, what do you think the cover price of this omnibus is? It's an 11-issue omnibus that just came out last month.
I would guess $75.
It's
$100. God.
It's $100, which means, if you do the math, each issue of this book is over $9.
You could probably buy the originals for that much.
Yeah, probably.
Maybe not.
You probably can. Not in very good condition, probably. So what is this? This is like what I was telling Scott earlier.
I bet it'd be cheaper to buy them, take them to my guy, and get them bound.
Maybe. Now, they wouldn't be quite as tall as this, though, because this is omnibus.
Yeah, right? That's true.
This book, as I was saying, is the original. You remember those?
Yeah.
It's the Adventures of Planet of the Apes.
I don't think I ever read any of that stuff when I was a kid, though. I think that was enough before my time.
Oh, yeah.
Who did the art on that?
Two different people. So they're all written by Doug Munch, but since it's two different movies, the first movie is by George Tuska, but the second one is by Alfredo Alcala. And let me tell you, Tuska's good. But Alfredo Alcala,
he's
the man. His artwork is really good in the back five. So, anyways, and the drawback's the coloring, clearly. But I mean, Tuska's good though. Don't get me wrong. So, if you've read or if you've watched the first two movies, Doug Munch basically, he's the writer, but he basically just took the movies and just made them into, and somehow the first one took 6 issues, the second one took 5. But I mean, I read it. I've had it for maybe like a month, maybe. And so I just busted it out. It's only 11 issues. Knocked it out real quick. I had never read it before. I thought it was good. I mean, it's, if you like Planet of the Apes, it's pretty good. But is it worth $100? If you were at Barnes & Noble, and this is $100, you'd probably be a fool to pay $100 for this. Unless, here's the unless, it's out of print, and it's the only one you can find, and you really, really want it, then you pay cover for it. But since it's still in print, look around and get this for cheap.
I cannot imagine there's a big demand for that.
No, and they probably didn't print a whole lot more than the pre-orders, I bet.
Yeah. So,
it does come with 2 covers. It's got the wraparound print cover. It comes with two different dust jacket images. one image you could get was like a cover number 8, which I'll show you that real quick. You can be the judge of which cover you would have got. Now, some people are really like, I only buy the classic covers. Not me. I like to get the new covers. So here's cover 7. Let me show you cover 8.
Depends on who and what it is, in my opinion.
Yeah, I pretty much just do the new cover. Okay, so this is the cover you can get, and I think this is the direct market cover, is the cover of issue 8. You can get that on your book. I went with, and I thought issue 8, I went with this cover right here. So my dust jacket looks like that. And it's by E.M. Gist, whoever he is, but it's really updated. It's like a painted.
Well, it's a nice painting.
Yeah, I dug it, so I went with that.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you.
You know, it's like
there, I wouldn't have a preference one way or the other, but I don't disagree with you.
So, anyways, if you're like me and you like Planet of the Apes, the movie book is a hell of a deal. Great package. The Adventures of, you know where you can get these comics at, though, besides buying the singles and besides buying this. What? Malibu printed this years and years ago as 2 different trades. I've got those, but they're in black and white.
Might be cool. Let me see that. They may look better in black and white.
I've got them, and I'm 90% certain they're black and white. I haven't looked at them in a while, but yeah. I'm a Planet of the Apes fan. I wanted it, so I got it, and I don't regret it. It's skinny, but I don't care. It's kind of cool.
No, I mean, you know,
it's a time capsule of old stuff.
Yeah, I mean, no. This stuff is cool. I mean, I'm not gonna run out and buy this.
I don't blame you.
But you know,
I got it for half cover. So
you talk about like, hey, you know, things I bought, I paid a ridiculous, not that I paid a lot, but that were the cover price made no sense. I have the, I don't even know what they call it, but they, a few years ago, Marvel did a Dark Phoenix Saga hardcover, and it's oversized.
Yeah,
it's a little bit oversized, and it's the Dark Phoenix Saga, and then it's the printing, it has the printing of what if Jean had lived, but the alternate one, like they did, you know. Yeah. They did that alternate one where they finished out it printed the issue where she lived.
Oh, okay. It's not the what if, though.
It's not a what if. It's the way they originally drew it, and then like afterwards they went back and re-released a special version of an alternate one. But anyway, that's in there, which is not in any of my trade paperbacks of the Dark Phoenix Saga. And it's, like I said, it's oversized. But it's the Dark Phoenix Saga. You can get the trade for, I think, $20. Or cheaper than that if you look at on Amazon or whatever, or at eBay. But the cover price on that was $75. And I got it. There was a place that was having a sale, and I had some credit from Free Comic Book Day, and so I got it for like half that. And I was like, okay. And it didn't cost me anything out of pocket. I was like, okay, this is cool. I'll get it. I like it because it's oversized. But yeah, the price on some of that stuff, it's like, what were they thinking?
Marvel, to put that, okay, number one, I'm getting on my soapbox here. Number one, that is not an omnibus. They can call it that, but it's not. Number two, if you're going to do an omnibus,
they should have put the magazines with it.
Well, okay, so the magazines, though, Boom put those out in 4 hardcovers that are this thick.
Oh, that would, okay.
It wouldn't have worked.
I didn't realize there were that many magazines. I mean, I knew there were more. I remember reading the magazines when I was a kid. I didn't realize there was.
Yeah, it's.
I didn't realize.
There's 4 Boom books.
Oh.
So, but here's the thing. A lot of omnibuses have extras in the back. Art, you know, pencils, inks, maybe a script, maybe, you know, whatever. Maybe a random what if or whatever that ties into it. This omnibus, 11 issues, has a zero. The only extra thing is the alternate cover. That's the only extra thing they've got. They could have added something, right, for your money?
Maybe.
And when they don't, since they own the property anyway now, they're not paying licensing fees because they own the property, shouldn't it only be about $50 total, maybe, because it's so thin? Why they put $100 on that book? It's a ripoff.
Because they can't. Know. I don't understand pricing.
But, you know, you talk about that overpriced book that you bought, which I don't consider that really overpriced, but I get what you're saying.
Well,
you know what I always go back to, though? Here's what I always go back to.
What do you go back to?
I go back to this all the time. We eat out all the time.
Yeah.
And you know, you can go and spend $7,500 on dinner, and that money's gone. Whether the meal is any good or not, that money's gone. So at least if you spend $75 or $100 on a book, you still got the book.
Yeah. Here's the. I went to grab this.
Yeah, I've seen that. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, I got it. It's $74.99.
Yeah, that's Marvel for you.
Yeah, and it's got a few extra things. I spoke too soon, but it's not a lot.
Nowadays, that'd be an omnibus.
Yeah, probably.
I mean, it's thicker than Splendid the X-Book.
You know, and it's oversized. Taller. Yeah. It is oversized. Like I said, I got it because it's like, okay, well, I don't know. Anyway.
But it's your story. If it's your story, get it, you know?
Oh, yeah.
If that's your favorite comic story and that's the best volume that they've got of it, the nicest volume, then yeah, by all means, pick it up.
Well, you know what's funny? Okay, so Dark Phoenix Saga, you know, I had the trade that I had. I bought the trade of that back when I was in...
We had the singles, too.
Read the singles when I was a kid. Saw the trade at, what was the bookstore there on 50th by Putnam City High School?
Oh, yeah. I forgot the name. It was like one of those book racks. I forgot the name.
Yeah, it was a used bookstore. I went in there one day. And I think it was before I got married. I think I was, I don't think I was, th- I think it was the time frame. I think it was when I worked at UPS. I was going to SNU. You know, I bought it, and at the time, there weren't a lot of trades out. It was used. Cover price was $7. I think I paid half that.
Yeah.
And I had that thing forever. Carried it in my backpack with me, or my briefcase, or whatever I was taking to work. Read it forever. Eventually, that's the one I got signed by John Byrne and Chris Claremont. And so I bought an identical one at a comic show. They were selling, they had a box of trades for like $3 or something. I got that, and I got the Secret Wars trade.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, but one time I was on eBay, and I saw, and I bought, I don't know, I have a couple different versions of that, because they've reprinted it with different covers. I don't have every cover, but they've reprinted it with, in my opinion, better covers, and better paper, and better color. They went in and redid the coloring,
yeah.
And the printing's better on some of the later ones. And what's weird is they've redone them. And they're thinner. So if you're going to carry one in your bag all the time, the thinner ones are better, in my opinion. So, like, for example, if you look at my bag, this is the one I got now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, look at the time. Let's let's wrap this thing up right here. As always, I've been your host, Dale Nelson, joined by my other host,
Scott Sackett.
Yo, check out our blog at betterthanfictionpodcast.blogspot.com, where I will post some cool photos of the cool stuff we've talked about tonight.
And if you enjoy this podcast, please take a second to leave a review and subscribe to our podcast. This will help other people find the podcast. Also, if you're in the northwestern part of Florida, up in the Panhandle and Pensacola specifically, stop in to Area 51 Comics and Toys, our sponsor.
Do it.
Navy Boulevard.
And with that, we'll say, hey, come back next week for another all-new episode. See ya. We're out of here.